Maybe come to order this, the meeting of the Minnesota House of Representatives, Page 12 Education Finance Committee. And we're very glad to be here tonight. My name is Terry Marr. I am a state representative from St. Peter. I represent Norfolk County and half of Sibley County. I teach at Gustavus Adolphus College, and I used to be the St. Peter School Board Chair and also the school board or the board chair of the Minnesota Valley Education District, which provides special education for 70 school districts in the greater Mankato area. We're very glad to have you all here tonight. Our goal is to hear directly from you about your experiences, your concerns, your thoughts about education and the future of education finance. I'm very pleased tonight to be here along with Representative Robin Brown from this area. This is a particularly important night for me. Robin is a very influential member of the House K-12 Education Finance Committee, and I always feel that Robin and I are fighting the good fight for rural Minnesota and rural Minnesota schools. Robin beat me to the punch in 2007. We both wanted to introduce all-day K funding bills, and Robin got hers into the pile before mine, so both a little jealous, and I'm also pleased that Robin agreed with me about the importance of having a state fund all-day kindergarten. That's something we're going to be talking about later tonight. I don't know how I'm going to be a mother of six grown children, a full-time art teacher in this beautiful building, and be as effective and a well-versed representative as Robin is. So you're very lucky to have Robin as your representative. Just to give you an idea for the format, we're going to take some short time to review some of the results from the 2008 legislative session. We're going to talk about what that means for the districts, and we're going to take a look at the education finance reform proposal that was introduced in 2008. Our wonderful House research analyst, Tim Strom, who's here at my left, will take us through an overview of both. Following the presentation, Robin will then serve as the co-chair, and she will take over the meeting, and we'll invite folks who are with us tonight to come and make comments and ask questions. If you're interested in testifying tonight and you have not yet filled out one of these green cards, we do have them available. We do ask that you fill out one of these green cards and make sure it gets submitted up here. This is a meeting of the committee. We do need to keep a record of who has testified. So if you do decide to come up and speak at one of these two microphones, we'll ask first that you state your name. And in the interest of time to make sure that everyone has a response and has a chance, we're going to ask folks to limit their comments to 3 minutes. If you have additional comments, if you have other questions you'd like to ask us, you certainly can talk with us after the meeting. You can also fill out a comment card, and we will get you a response to your comment card. So there will be a number of ways to interact with us this evening. This meeting is being taped. We ask you each to state your name before testifying. We are scheduled to end this meeting at 8:30. If we run out of time, or if you would prefer not to make a comment on the record tonight, we do have the comment cards available. And before we begin, I'm going to ask the committee members here to introduce themselves as well, and I think I'll start with Representative Mingus here on my right.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Augustine Willie Dominguez. I'm State Representative of Minneapolis, District 58B, which serves downtown Minneapolis and the North Side. It's my first term in office. I also chair the Disparities in School Support Services, which deals with the integration of revenue. Member, of course, of the K-12 Finance Committee. It's a pleasure being here today in Orlando. I feel like I'm kind of home. I have relatives that are attending your schools here, relatives in this community. So I am here to listen to things that are happening within your district, and you do have your superior person working for you, is Robin Brown. She's the person that's up at the Capitol fighting every time we're in session, or when we're out of session, she gets us together and talk about the issues here in the rural community, as well as our chairperson, Terry Norrell. Some of the other community members are not here. I know that our schedules are kind of up and down because people are all campaigning and want to get elected to help support your education in the districts that we're serving here now. And we're traveling throughout the state of Minnesota and putting together valuable information. But I'm here also because this is, it was my first one. I lost my primary, but I'm here interested to continue the work that I have been elected to. I'll be in office until the end of the year. But it means a lot to us to continue our work, to get the ideas. Those who are going to carry on the opportunities for our children, we want to make sure that they get their information from the districts that we're attending these hearings on. So I want to thank you again for inviting me out here to the Elderly District.
I'm your representative, Robin Brown, and I just want to thank the committee members for coming to our wonderful district tonight to listen to your testimony and to encourage each and every one who chooses to speak to come up and do so. It was so important to get the committee to come down to the district and hear what we need to do here in southern Minnesota in making our education funding formula better. This bill that you have in front of you tonight, 4178, is a bill that I do co-author, and there's many, many parts of this bill that are so strong. But I look at it as a work in progress, and that's why the committee is here tonight, to hear what needs to be done to make it better serve our district and all of Minnesota. I'd also like to thank each of you for coming tonight, and I'll get a chance to thank some of you personally in a little bit. But again, thank you for the opportunity for serving. And the committee has been, I don't know if you know it or not, but the committee has been down in our area twice now. Once to speak to view our special education program over at our elementary school, and now again tonight. So they do take Southern Minnesota seriously and our needs seriously. Thank you, each of you.
I'd like to recognize Superintendent Dave Prescott. I know I arrived here an hour early, and Superintendent Prescott was visibly getting the room prepared. We'd like to thank you, Superintendent Prescott, and all your staff for your hospitality in helping us organize this event. As I mentioned, we've asked House staff to prepare a presentation on K-12 education finance and the results from this past session. We've worked hard in the past session to provide additional funding. We were pleased that we were able to supplement last year's K-12 finance bill with an additional $51 per student. And I'd be happy to tell you more about that story some other time. I also asked Mr. Strong to share some information about the provisions of the education finance reform proposal that Representative Mindy Garland, the chair of this committee, that Senator Terry Bonoff, our both lead folks carrying it, Representative Bramlin is on that bill, I am on that bill, Representative Lingus, I believe, is on that bill as well. We'd like to talk about a vision of how we take the work of Governor Plenty's Task Force on Education Funding and the work of PS Minnesota and actually implement the ideas we find in those proposals. Before Mr. Strong begins, I'd like to say that in general, the intent of the proposal that we'll discuss tonight is to boost safe funding for education, to reduce property taxes, to make sure the students graduate ready to succeed. We provide a higher base formula, and we fully fund the state obligation for special education in order to take care of the basic needs of the districts, and also provide more equity and fairness in funding. The proposal also lists the basic formula for an inflationary measure to provide more predictability and stability to allow districts to be able to do better planning from year to year. Number three, this proposal takes into account different student populations and district characteristics. It provides flexibility for early childhood education support. This bill helps to address transportation costs, fuel costs, building maintenance costs. All things that we've been hearing as we've been going around the state are of tremendous concern to school districts. And finally, the proposal is put together as a scalable package. Representative Bradley uses an analogy of the Eiffel Tower. We can build this model up layer by layer, stage by stage, but our intention is to get the entire tower in place. And with that, I'm going to turn to Mr. Strong.
Thanks very much, Mr. Chairman. My name is Tim Strong. I'm an analyst with the Office of House Research at the Legislature. I've worked for the Minnesota House of Representatives for 25 years. My office is a nonpartisan office, and my job is to help all 134 House members with their education questions. What I'd like to do tonight is spend about 20 minutes going through the PowerPoint presentation that was at the front door for you. It's also on the screen behind us. Spending a couple of minutes talking about what happened in the last session, and then after that, spending the rest of the time talking about the characteristics of House File 4178. In terms of the last session, as many of you know, the legislature budgets on a two-year or biennial basis, and so that means the odd-numbered years are the years where the major budget is set. The 2007 legislature set the budget for the 08-09 school year at about slightly under $800 million was appropriated in additional educational funds. During the 2008 session, the session that just ended, some small amounts of additional money were provided for the K-12 system. The primary source of that was an additional $51 per pupil unit on the basic formula allowance. Additionally, for school districts that had a reserve in their capital account, they're authorized to transfer up to $51 per pupil from their capital account to their general fund. Next, there were a couple of levy changes that matter for some districts potentially and not others. Those included an increase in the lease levy for those districts that leased facility space, an increase in the levy for the districts participating in the local collaborative time study programs, and for school districts with large retiree health costs, there was a provision passed in the tax bill that authorized the school districts to sell bonds in order to retire those debts that they've incurred for their retired employees. That's often referred to as the OPED or other post-employment benefit levy. We're not sure how many districts are going to avail themselves of that levy authority. The rough estimate is probably about 30 districts will be using that this fall. In addition to the changes that were made for fiscal year 2009, there was another change that was made beginning for fiscal year 2010. And this change, while it's a relatively small dollar amount, is likely to provide a fair amount of controversy over the next couple of years. There's a pot of money called the Permanent School Fund, which is generated from the proceeds of mining and logging activities on Permanent School Fund lands. That money up until the 2009 has been used as an offset to the school district's other general education aids. So essentially it saves the state money to provide that money to school districts, but it's no additional revenue to school districts. Starting in 2010, that money, which is about $30 million per year, will be added to the school formulas on the basis of the resident student counts in each district, and it's estimated that that will be about $36 per resident student for each district. That part of the change is not what's going to be controversial. What I think is going to be controversial is it's going to change some of the dynamics between the environmental issues and the resource management issues for the school trust on lands. So I expect next year's legislature is going to be grappling a bit with those changes. In terms of the background of House File 4178, a little history may be of help. In 2004, Governor Pawlenty created a task force to examine school funding issues. As I mentioned, I've been with the legislature more than 25 years now, and every few years this is a process that happens, which I think speaks somewhat to the current condition of our school funding formula. There's a lot of things in it, but a lot of those things have been added rather piecemeal, and every few years there's an attempt to try and reform that system. The governor's task force met in 2004, created something called professional judgment panels, and those panels looked at various costs of education models. They made some preliminary recommendations, and then the task force activities were disbanded. A group called PS Minnesota was then formed to carry on the work of the task force. PS Minnesota was an outgrowth of some of the education organizations, and they put together, over a couple of years' time, a variety of reports and some resources regarding school funding. They came up with a plan during 2007, at the end of 2006-2007, and submitted that plan to the legislature. The plan was a series of principles and was not at that time drafted in the form of legislation. In 2007, the legislature heard the results of the PS Minnesota plan and put some small amount of money into the Education Finance Bill of 2007 for a task force to further study the PS Minnesota recommendations. That money was vetoed, but the task force met anyway about three or four times during the fall of 2007. And after those meetings, the House and Senate members of the task force sat down, and House File 4178 was the legislation that they introduced that was on behalf of that task force. House File 4178 is not an official part of that task force, but I think reflects the direction that the task force was heading. That's what we're going to talk about tonight, and very quickly, I'm going to run through some of the goals and characteristics of House File 4178. There were five goals that were an outgrowth of the PS Minnesota work, and those goals include an adequate level of funding for all public school students in the state, a more equitable funding system, a system that's fairer, a system that's somewhat simplified from our relatively complicated system, and a system that's scalable for allowing it to be phased in over time. In terms of the basic characteristics of the plan, the goals that were taken into account when House File 4178 was drafted, including setting the basic formula allowance at an amount high enough to cover each district's basic instructional expenditures. Second, to have the state cover the share of special education funding that it actually said it was covering. Third, to address some of the issues regarding school facility needs. And fourth, to start restoring some of the equalization that's currently essentially gone away from our school funding system. Let me run through a few specifics for you of the details of House File 4178. The first of these changes, perhaps, is to have to do with how students are counted, and perhaps to go the furthest towards simplifying our current system. Right now in Minnesota, we have a whole variety of ways we count pupils. We weight them by grade level. We address whether they're a resident or a service student of the district. And we also figure our declining pupil counts into the enrollment estimates as well. So our current count of students is really fairly complicated. Part of House File 4178 is simply to say that every full-time kid counts as one pupil. This change would end the pupil weighting by grade level, and it would essentially help both staff at the legislature and others explain what we mean when we talk about funding on a student basis. House File 4178 would teach the general principle of our current funding system, which is that the funding is a student-based funding system based on the number of kids that are served by each school district. Currently, that funding level is set at $5,124 per pupil unit. House File 4178 recommends to increase that to $7,500 per pupil. Second, and this is quite controversial within the Department of Finance and the legislature, the House File 4178 would automatically index the formula allowance to the rate of inflation using the gross domestic product implicit price deflator as the rate of inflation. As you may be aware, currently our school finance system, the legislature needs to take an action to change that formula allowance, and there aren't automatic increases built in. So if the formula allowance is going to go up next year, the legislature essentially has to pass a bill to raise that. This would essentially change that by having it automatically phased in to a higher level based on inflation, unless the legislature acted to either make it a higher amount than that or a lower amount than that. In terms of our current formula, there's an element of that health compensatory revenue, which is the second largest part of the general education formula. Compensatory revenue provides additional funding to school districts for their remedial needs. It uses a proxy variable, which is the free and reduced lunch count of the number of students served in each school. Under our current law, compensatory revenue is calculated at the site level and is what we call a concentration formula. So the larger your percentage of compensatory eligible children, that is, the larger the percentage of free and reduced lunch students, the higher the amount of compensatory per free and reduced lunch student that you receive. This bill essentially removes the concentration factor for all but a handful of districts and simply provides a flat amount, 33% of the formula, which is currently $2,500 per pupil, for each district's compensatory count. Additionally, the calculation would move from site level to the district level, with the argument there being that individual decisions within a district shouldn't modify the way that legislative compensatory revenue was calculated. Few of the other formula changes contained in the House File 4178 include the change to the way the limited English proficiency program is funded. Currently, we fund those services for a maximum of 5 years, and we use the concentration formula in that funding scheme as well. House File 4178 would remove the cap and allow a district to provide funded services for as long as the students need it. And secondly, would simplify the formula by eliminating concentration and simply providing each district with an additional 20% of the formula allowance for each child who does not speak English. The declining pupil revenue formula, instead of being part of the pupil count, would be moved to a separate categorical part of the formula. Essentially, what would happen is that for your districts, you just use as your enrollment count either the greater of the current year's enrollment or a three-year average of the enrollment. So for most of the school districts in Minnesota, which are declining in pupil count, but the pupil count we would use is the three-year average pupil count of students served. One of the more controversial parts of House File 4178 has to do with a new revenue factor that's established. It's called the Location Equity Index. This factor provides additional money to school districts based on the wage and housing characteristics of the county where that school district is located. Essentially, the higher the wage rate in your county and the higher the housing costs in your county, the higher your location equity index would be. With the most recent data that we have available to us, the location and equity index number is less than one in all of the counties in the state except for the seven counties in the metropolitan area. This formula, under the current data, then would provide additional money for those districts that have a portion or all of their school district located in the seven county metropolitan area. The revenue essentially is equal to the district's index number. Carver County currently has the highest wages and housing data with an index number of 12%. And essentially, they get half of that, or 6%, times the formula allowance. That's an average of about $370 of additional revenue for the district to get the location equity revenue. Under our current formula, we have a sparsity component to it that goes to small, geographically isolated school districts. House File 4178 would continue that formula, but would make some small changes to it. Because of a higher formula allowance, the sparsity revenue would go up. Secondly, current law requires a minimum distance between schools in order to qualify for the sparsity revenue. For elementary schools, that district distance would be lowered from 19 to 15 miles. There are a few reserves created in the House File 4178. A reserve is essentially a set aside with the legislature saying part of this new money has to be spent in a particular way. The largest of these reserves is for something called innovation revenue, and each district would need to reserve 1.5% of the basic formula allowance, or 1.5% of that $7,500 for innovation revenue. The districts could essentially use that for any sort of research-based practice that would improve student academic performance according to a plan adopted by the school board, unless the district's not making adequate yearly progress, in which case the district would need to consult with the Department of Education prior to developing its plan. Other reserves include 1% of the formula being reserved for gifted and talented programs. In addition to the current levy for career and technical, which used to be called secondary vocational programming, another 0.5% would be reserved for those activities. And the existing reserves that school districts made, including 2% for staff development, the reserve of compensatory revenue for remedial programs for students, and the reserve for operating capital would all remain in place. There are a number of smaller components of our current funding system that would be eliminated under House File 4178. Those include training and experience revenue, equity revenue, transition revenue, an offset that's referred to as the pension offset, the existing formula of $12 $1 for people with gifted and talented revenue, and the funding for QCOMP would all be eliminated under House Law 4178. Lastly, in terms of the general ed program, the referendums that each district has worked to pass would be offset in part. This is because the goal of House Law 4178 is to provide the basic funding for schools all through the formula and have the referendum be for extras as decided by an individual school district. So each district's referendum would be reduced by $500 for pupils with an equal amount added to the formula. This essentially means that if your district had a $600 referendum, you'd be giving up $500 of that, which is being raised through the property tax, and receiving $500 additional of state aid. If your district had no referendum, you'd be receiving $500 of state aid with no offset. The goal there essentially is to eliminate some of the reliance on the referendum methods. Outside of the general education program, there are a couple other changes. Currently, our special education revenue formula says each district is entitled to 68% of its spending on essential personnel, essentially your staff costs, your staff salary costs. But that amount is capped by the state currently. This would remove that cap. This is about $100 million per year in the early years that this would cost to do. But essentially, it would allow the 68% to be fully funded. In terms of pupil transportation needs, in 1995, the legislature eliminated categorical funding for pupil transportation. So instead, there's currently all there is a component in general education called transportation sparsity revenue. This bill, House File 4178, would add two new elements to the pupil transportation formula. Essentially, the school board would be able to determine if any of the transportation in the district were hazardous and could cover that with additional funding from the state so long as that didn't exceed 20% of the district's total transportation costs for transporting children to and from schools. And additionally, a second amount of 5% of the district's transportation budget would be paid to the district and state aid each year to keep the bus fleets current. And for those school districts that contract for bus services, that would just be additional cash that they could use for the contracts. In terms of school facility needs, a couple of changes are being made in House File 4178. Currently, there's a formula in place for the large school districts in the state. Those that have 1.8 million square feet or more are allowed to do deferred maintenance activities without voter approval. House File 4178 would extend that authority to all the school districts in the state, regardless of their size. Secondly, for school building projects, we currently have a formula called debt service equalization aid. House File 4178 makes two changes to that. The first is it increases the equalization aid factors, and the second is for those districts with agricultural property, a credit is created for the ag property that essentially would take 66% of the cost of any of the building costs that fell under the farmland, and that would be paid for in state aid. So those are the changes for school facilities for House File 4178. Finally, then, in terms of the property tax area, the elimination of some of the categorical levies, the operating capital equity transition and QCOMP levies would all be eliminated, and the offset in the referendum levy would also cause some additional reductions in the overall levy. The total cost under House File 4178 are on a revenue basis are about $2.1 billion per year, with $1.7 billion of that being in the general ed program. That's listed on the printout that you have in front of you that's on the legal size paper running sideways or landscape. If you look in the upper right-hand corner there, the third column from the right, you can see the total of $1.7 billion. That's the additional cost of the general ed components. Our estimates are that the transportation and special education costs would be about $100 million per year, and the deferred maintenance would be about $200 million a year. So from a revenue standpoint, we're estimating about $2.1 billion per year. Finally, there's a chart, just for your convenience here, on the last couple of pages that shows how much is in each of those components in general education that's being changed. And then finally, there's a list of a variety of online resources for you, for those of you who are interested in more information on school finance. There's some printouts out on the web that the Department of Education does. There's a guidebook that I put together that explains each of our current formulas. and there's some fiscal worksheets that will give you a general sense of school funding in Minnesota. So with that, Mr. Chair, I think that's a quick summary of what's in House File 4178.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Trump. As you can see, with his decades of expertise, we're very lucky to have Mr. Trump here tonight. He'll assist us in answering some of the questions that may come up that may be of a more technical nature. I do want to allow Representative Denise Dietrich, who's joined us, to introduce herself.
Good evening. Nice to be here with you this evening. My name is Denise Dietrich. I am the state representative for District 47A, which is all of Champlin and a portion of Clinton. Thank you.
And we're very fortunate to have Representative Dietrich here. She's been a wonderful leader in education as well, especially as taking leadership on the Permanent School Trust Fund land revenue that Mrs. Strong mentioned that we may touch on again later tonight. And at this point, I'm going to turn the gavel over to Representative Brown to run the rest of the meeting.
Thank you, Representative Morrow. Again, I'd like to thank everybody for coming tonight. I started taking notes about recognizing people, and as I started at the front of the room, working my way back to the back of the room, it seems to me that I know every one of you. And by name, and I thought, oh, I can't do this. This is going to take all night. So I'm going to limit my comments and thank you to our superintendents and our school boards. But I do see teachers, business managers, and special educators, and just so many friends here tonight. And I thank each of you for being here. But we do have superintendents from our area. And if I miss somebody, please stand to be recognized. But I did see our own superintendent here from Albert Lee, Mr. Prescott, Dr. Prescott. Could you stand, please? Thank you for being here. We also have Mr. Mark Rubinick from Glendale Evans. Thank you for coming tonight. And Mr. Joe Vanilla from Alden Conger. And Mr. Joe Brown from Grand Meadow. Thank you. And then we also have a number of school board members, and I'm going to have you stand in group if you would, please. But I see many, many members from Austin. If you could stand, please, school board members. And I know you're out there, David Stevenson, Kathy Green, Mary Clyde. John Fox, particularly, I know you're there, so thank you for coming tonight. And then our own school board members here from Albert Lee. We have both Bill Leland and Sally Eckhart. Thank you so much for coming. And I think we'll go ahead and begin our meeting. What I want to remind everybody, please, is that what we're going to do is we're going to hear from as many people as we can that are interested in speaking. So I ask that you keep that in mind when you make your comments. And I'll call up people who have signed up to testify first, and if time allows, we'll go ahead and open it up to other people who have been so moved to testify. And I'm going to mess up this first name because this is the one last name that I did not recognize. Paula Wendorf, is that right? Did I so mess it up?
No, you're fine.
Thank you. I almost put it kind of in the middle so I could ask somebody how to pronounce it. Thank you,
Paula. Representative Brownlee, committee, I recognize several of you from the government. Sorry, I don't think so.
And Paula, if you could. Yes. And if you could go ahead and just say your name.
Sorry. My name is Paula Bloendorf. I'm Albert Lee here. I'm a special education teacher in District 241. And I just came tonight interested in hearing about this. Definitely also feeling connected a little in that you visited last year and saw we don't want Mr. Crosby. just saw the need for students here. And in their ongoing needs and our district, so
staff of 40 students I work with, and it warms my heart to think that there might be a possibility to fully fund these students that have special needs. And I just think that that's an important step to take. I feel that when I ask for something for my students, I feel it's important, and I also know there are other students in our building that are equally important, that it's taking money from different areas. And last year I got very creative. I paid attention, and I'm like, oh, I've got things in my room, and my students from, I believe it was 11 different sources, budgets that had technology, oh yeah, we can find something for this, and we can find something for that from our media, and it's just, it's always just such an energy and an effort, and I would rather put my energy and efforts into my students. So I just want you to know, it's important and so, thank you for coming this last fall. Thank you for being here tonight, and your efforts are appreciated.
I think that we all love our jobs, and we all love the teachers, the students that we teach for, and I really appreciate the heartfelt comments. Bill Leland is next, and then Christy Wessel will be on next. Thank you.
Oh, my name is Phil Leland. I'm a school board member here in Robert Lee, and I first of all want to welcome you and thank you for coming to Robert Lee in the area to present this. It's a sheer joy to follow that type of action, and I know that we have a lot of that in the school district. That's what's so great about this particular bill. There's a lot of great things, and there's a couple of things that I just want to stress that I've seen in it that I really think are important. And then there's one issue that I want to make sure that we to watch for. The one thing about the regional class differences, I understand the need for it, I appreciate that, and I would encourage that you keep that component in, because I think that's going to be vital for the success of this bill. The other one is the deferred maintenance cost needs, the ability to levy for that. Extremely important component, I think. If you look at Albert Lee with the work that we've done here, in energy conservation, we've been actually put that into our school district more than $1 million over the last 50-odd months. You do those types of things through personal efforts, but also there's a great opportunity to be able to do that by dealing with your deferred maintenance. And it's a really good component to be able to continue. I just would encourage you to make sure that that's equalized, or fully equalized, if I can stress that. And the last part, the last two items I want to make sure I touch, is currently the bill does not limit or cap referendum amounts. And I think that's an extremely important concept if you want to keep in this bill or at least introduce into it. We can have runaway funding that we've seen in a lot of districts and trying to catch up. And what I like to call, our students have the same differences as other school districts. And we need to keep that in mind and treat everybody equally and equitably and fairly. So I would really encourage you to take a look at putting that in. And then also increasing the equalization factor. We haven't seen anything since 1993 in that particular area. And right now there are school districts out there paying 3 to 4 times other school districts to be able to get the same amount of aid. And we really need to get after that and try to get that equalized. And Albert Lee is looking at potentially falling off of utilization. And we're probably one of those districts that needs the most with our demographics. But again, thank you very much for coming, and I appreciate your efforts and full support to you back in.
Thank you so much. Mr. Wessel, and then Brian.
I see what's really been plus the first school board. Tim, can you expound a little bit more on the debt service equalization and what that's going to look like? I know that in our particular district that would make a world of difference in passing on referendum. I've testified in front of all of you for 3 or 4 times, and they're all very familiar faces. And I want to thank you. This is probably the best news we have heard in ages, and like the other school board member said, you know, with all of our differences are so similar, we really do need to do something. It's painful to continue to make cuts and increase class sizes just because we can't balance the budget and have enough money to offer the same things to the outstate students, the metro students have. I compare my kids' opportunities in school to my nieces and nephews in Woodbury, and obviously there's no comparison. So Tim, if you could tell us a little bit more about that sort of thing, right?
Mr. Strong, if you'd like to comment on that.
Thank you, Madam Chair. There's two changes to the debt service formula. This is the formula that helps school districts pay for building bonds. The first of those changes is to increase the equalization factors. Their current dollar per pupil essentially would be about doubled on the first tier and increased a little bit on the second tier. So that would impact a fair number of relatively moderately valued districts with large building debt outstanding. The other change is the agricultural credit, and that would essentially take two-thirds of the tax that would otherwise fall on farmland and make that into a state paid credit. So that change essentially shifts a whole bunch of property tax that otherwise would be paid by farmland to state aid.
Thank you. Another word? And then another show.
My name is Andrew Wood. Thank you to all of you for coming tonight. I grew up in a small town, much elderly seems to be, compared to where I grew up. And I graduated from high school in 1993, and I feel about the time that Bill mentioned, 93, and I feel as if that small town didn't seem to have money problems then, and that small town has a lot of money problems now, similar to a lot of out-state districts. And I came to Albuquerque 5 years ago because I found my dream job. This is the absolute, 5 years later I still say, this is the only job I ever wanted. I want to retire here, I want to finish here. My wife and I are both educators. We don't have kids at the moment, and if we ever decide to have kids, there should be absolutely no reason that I should have to consider moving my family to the Twin Cities just because we're worried about budget cuts. I'm an outstate guy, and I've seen too many people migrate to the Twin Cities for teaching jobs. Of worry, of concern, both for their jobs, but also for their children. And the things that this school district was able to do on the budget it does are impressive. I will be advising for the high school newspaper and the high school yearbook. And there's been a story tradition. Judy Knuth is here in the building, or in the room right now, and she did the advising for many years. And she knows that we're lucky because our district supports that. But we should be able to support all of those opportunities in the same way. Right now, students at Albuquerque High School, sports are starting to become something that only, I shouldn't say starting to become. Alright, sometimes sports and extracurriculars are things that you have to look into in your family budget to make sure that you can afford. So that's something that I worry about with these arts. Diane Haynes is currently in another room preparing for doing some rehearsals for Cinderella, and we have an amazing music program here, and there's we want to continue that here. We have great musical. We invite you to come down and see every fall. Lastly, I have at the moment, and I teach writing classes, and at the moment I have 35 students in one class and put it through another. And without getting into the differences between the Doc system and the 7th grade day, I have over 150 students at the moment, and I really wanted to, in college, I got to learn about doing writing workshops and working with my students individually on the writing. And that's a tough challenge with 150 students to really work on them individually along with the writing. And so I just want to make sure that outstate schools have all those same opportunities as the Forest Lakes and the Woodberries, and that we should be proud to live in outstate Minnesota like I am. And we should all feel that way, and we shouldn't have to feel any pressure to migrate. Thank you.
Thank you, Ben. Larry Kellogg and then Dr. Prescott.
I'm Larry Kellogg, and the Director of Finance and Operations here at Albert Lee Schools. And first of all, I just want to thank you for all the work and effort that you put in to this bill. We in Albert Lee belong to an organization called School for Equity in Education. And I think you probably know that we're one of those groups, and maybe the one that had even the greatest impetus to pick up the task force study and to get it moving. So we're really happy to see that you're carrying on with that. I don't have a lot to add to what's been said, except to say that in Albert Lee, we're one of the lucky ones. This is my third year here at Albert Lee, and up until now, a lot of time and energy of the administrators and the employees, and especially the board, has gone into trying to pass a letter of referral. You know, there's not a whole lot of mystery. We need to keep our class sizes at a certain number. We need to have the money to hire young, bright, energetic teachers and keep the quality staff that we have. We need to take care of those kids with special needs, and we need to maintain our buildings. And unfortunately, with the money now that the state is providing, we just can't do it. There's just no way. So we're forced to go to the local taxpayers for help. Like I say, we're one of the lucky ones. We were able to pass a nice referendum last November. But a lot of school districts aren't that lucky. And I know they have to be really sure. And guess what? We're going to make money this year. We're going to increase our fund balance. Next year, we may even break even. But after that, we're going to be operating at a deficit already. So we just want to encourage you to keep up the good work, because it means a lot to all of us. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Dr. Prescott and then Michelle Brown.
Good evening, and I also like to thank you for coming and appreciate the work of the committee. I don't have a lot of details. I think you probably heard quite a bit about details about the bill already. I, for one, am just glad that I lived long enough or stayed in this profession long enough to see the second miracle. And it isn't here yet, and I'm really concerned about how we fund this thing, and we haven't talked very much about that. But, you know, there's some things about the bill that are just nothing but just a lot of celebration that should be going on to see that possible increase over time. Somebody who's looked at 1%, now looking at 22, 23, 24% increase in funding is just a remarkable thing you can think about. There are some pieces of the bill that are concerning. The equity pieces, I think, are lacking, and things need to be worked out. So maybe I have a question to the committee. And maybe it has to do with strategy and how you work with people across the aisle and how you work with the whole, the Senate and the House. Is this a bill that we should really debate and tear apart now as we try to fix the pieces that aren't quite right, according to one group versus another group? Or is this a bill that we should all just get behind and push hard and then sorted out after it's passed. Is that my question?
Yeah, I think that's worthy of comment, and I think we'll wait until the end and maybe have a little discussion on that. Joseph Brown and then David Simonson.
Good afternoon. Glad to see you. Thanks a lot for coming. I was so pleased this morning when I woke up and got a copy of the Pioneer Press that shows photographs of the new I-35W bridge. And as we all know, we could be so proud of Minnesota that we opened up this brand new bridge because the other one was broke and the other bridge fell down. And I'm doing the comparison, and I'm so proud of our state because it's a classic example of what happens when the federal government, the state government, cities, counties, the local private sector, when we all pull together, we can do great things in Minnesota and do them very quickly. And the fact that this bridge, you know, came together in 400 some days is just incredible to me. And I think we can make a comparison that the current school funding formula in Minnesota, as we know it today, is broke. It's absolutely broke. It's inadequate. It's inequitable. It's way too complex. And it's really unfair, especially for those of us in southern Minnesota. Let me talk about complexity for just a minute. I was with Dr. Tom Melcher on Monday in Rochester and went over our levy limitation and certification reports. This is a 31-page document that is three columns wide. This is the formula that we must go through as school superintendents to calculate the amount of revenue. It has nothing to do with our budget. This is the amount of revenue. A 92-page document just to calculate our revenue in Minnesota. The current formula is too complex, and it needs to be fixed. I have a couple of concerns, and maybe it's my background as a former member of the Senate in Iowa, that the Senate and the House sometimes try to fix each other's bills. I don't know if it happens in Minnesota at all, but I could add just a couple of friendly amendments here. I don't think it's a great start. When I read this bill, and I look at the goals that you folks have put forth in House File 4178, they are superb. The goals are absolutely the right way to go. And there's not an educator in Minnesota that will not support those goals. There's a few pieces of the bill, though, that do not support those goals. Let me go through those. First of all, QCOM. You're kind of in QCOM country right now. We have three school districts here tonight, Grand Meadows, which was the ninth QCOM school in the state, Albert Lea, and Alden Concord. Three of the QCOM schools are right here in this area. We're very proud of our teachers and very proud of the fact that when they do and go the extra mile, they should get additional revenue. And I would ask you to quit using QCOM as a political football. You know, this was one good idea that the governor came up with. And those of us across the aisle, I think, can support it. Compensatory revenue. Once again, I always ask the question, regardless of zip code, why do my children in Grand Meadow only get $500 if they're on free lunches? And a child in St. Paul, Minneapolis, get $2,500. Why did my child grow only 20% of the children of the inner city or the children in other districts? It seems to me that if you're poor, you should get the same amount of revenue behind you, and if you are going to keep compensatory revenue, which I hope you do, let's make it equal. Let's not have an index. The location equity index, I'm not a big fan of that right now, unless you do something with the local tax effort. I'll come to that in a minute. I'll talk a little bit about the GDP and what's the price of labor. When you look at inflation in Minnesota, inflation in Minnesota is much lower than inflation for a school district. You know, I wish any superintendent I'm sure would say that it's unrealistic to think that our inflation rate for the school is 3%. You know, we've seen 5 years in a row of healthcare costs going up double digit. We just bought brand new American history books, Professor Morrow. And $87 a piece. They were not $87 a piece 4 years ago. Food, milk, energy. By the way, the extra 1% that we got, $51, it paid for codeine oil. It paid for my gas bill to get my kids to school and get them home. I appreciated the extra $20,000, but all it did was pay my diesel fuel increase from last year. The point of that story is when you look at the GDP and listed price deflator, maybe we should come up with a realistic number of what the real inflation rate is for K-12 public schools in Minnesota. My guess is that it's at least double digit. It's nothing at the 3 or 4% level. And then my last comment is this. The one area that I'm really most concerned about the bill is that there is really no local property tax uniform levy. And we only have to go 14 miles to the south to my former home state of Iowa. And there was a state representative who served in Iowa for 22 years. He then went to the Congress, and he's now in the United States Senate. His name was Charles Grassley. Charles Grassley wrote the Iowa school funding formula in 1971 that is still on the books. It's 37 years old. What makes their formula so different than ours? They have a uniform levy in Iowa. Every single piece of property in Iowa pays the exact same levy for schools. It's $5.40 per $1,000 assessed value. If you have a $100,000 home, you pay $540 for your local school. The rest comes from the state. It's the most equitable funding formula in the entire nation. And Mr. Strong, if you don't have access to that, I'll send you a copy. Can I do that? Because it is, and it's worked, and it was a bipartisan bill that came out in 1971 and still in the books of works. So I would say, if we're going to talk about equity, let's make sure things are equal, and let's make sure they're adequate. The very last comment I'll make is this. We are a small school district, 380 kids. We are growing in enrollment. We actually have seen growth in the last 5 years. Yet this year, to balance my budget, I had to cut 11 staff members, 4 faculty, a half-time principal, and a rest support staff. We eliminated BAM, Industrial Tech, Family and Consumer Science, Spanish. We eliminated programs. Now, to do that, we protected the fact that we had 4 years of math and 4 years of science, because that's a priority for us in Grand Meadow. But the fact of the matter is, you know, regardless of zip code, if you remember those 4 words when you leave southern Minnesota and you vote next January, regardless of zip code, my children down here are just as important as yours, and let's face it, someday our kids will be yours, and your kids may be ours. We're one state, let's unify together. By the way, thank you so much for coming to Freeborn County. It's a real pleasure and honor to have you here. Nice to see you, Robin. Okay.
You think we don't have conversations like this at all?
I know.
Yeah. David Simonson, and then Ann Hudson.
I wish I thank the committee for coming and the work you've done on this bill. Just a couple of comments. I was deeply appreciative of the fact that you're intending and fully funding your part of the special education fund. That is a huge thing. That's enabled our district to free money up for a lot of other things. In the past, you increased the last time around, and this time this will help us even more. I'm a little bit bothered by the idea of, like, it's not being bothered so much as just the old history. When Jesse Ventura decided to take our referendums away, fund them from the state level, the next year we had to go for another referendum. If we hadn't gone for that referendum, we'd be in tough shape right now. Fortunately, our community came behind our school district and funded us for that referendum. That's enabled us to stay ahead of all the problems that a lot of districts have had. And doing something like that, I hope that it will continue. It would be a one-time shot. And that the state would promise to fully fund and continue with providing their district the money we need to continue with the plans and the things that we have in place. One of the things that bothers me some is that revenues are tied to Aboriginal progress. And of course, that isn't you as much as the federal government, but nevertheless, this body makes the tests that our kids have to take. And if those tests are far more difficult than other states, which they all should be because we want our kids to do the absolute best they can in the classroom and be able to compete with the rest of the world, but if other states with a much weaker system than ours do much better and make that average even in progress, they're not facing the problems that we have when we look at our schools that are failing when they're doing much better than those other states are actually. So I'm for the consideration, but I hope you keep in mind that the testing has to be equitable. If the rest of the nation isn't doing as well as we are, then we shouldn't be punished for doing better. Our kids are doing very well in the classroom, and they're continuing to do well, and we're going to strive for their perfection, which is unattainable. We all know that. But we will try to do that. But the state has to recognize that the testing that they're making us do is making it difficult for us, because if we start losing revenue because we're failing, that's going to cause a big problem for our districts. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Dan Hudson and Lori Nelson, and what I need to tell you is that we're at about 8:05 when we go to 8:30. I just said that we keep a few minutes at the end for closing comments. So it's just two people to speak. If you have been so moved, you want to fill out one of these green cards quickly and send it up to you.
Members of the committee, good evening. I'm Ann Hutton. I'm the Executive Director of the Southeastern Libraries Cooperating Regional Library System that serves this corner of the state. I really appreciate you coming to Freeborn County so that I don't have to go to St. Paul to talk to you. The library community is very excited by this prospect of this bill. We see ourselves as partners in education. Partners because we have school libraries in each of the school districts. We know that in any district, school libraries are among those things that periodically are cut because we want to keep those class sizes down. We want to try and make sure that we have those basic components. Curriculum needs met. We're not specifically looking for any earmarks for libraries as this bill moves forward. We understand that if there's more dollars available to serve our children, that libraries will benefit as well. We know that there's research that shows that well-staffed and well-provisioned library improve reading scores and help schools. Public Library is also a strong educational partner, and from a regional library perspective, I look forward to a much more simplified formula. The Regional Library Basic System Support is part of the education funding, and that too is a very complicated formula with indexes and all sorts of things. So if you simplify one formula, we might have to sort of ride on the coattails and look for a simplification in Regional Library Basic System Support as well. This is a huge task. I moved to Minnesota in 1984, and I heard about this thing called the Minnesota Miracle, and it was, wow, what a fantastic state I've moved to. So I likewise am very pleased to know that I'm still here and working in Minnesota, and I'm going to see a second miracle. Thank you.
Thank you.
Welcome. My name is Lori Nelson. I teach in a self-contained functional skills special ed classroom here at Elberlee High School. I've been teaching since 1978, so as you can imagine, most of that time has been in special ed, so as you can imagine, I've seen lots of changes in those 30 years, in funding as well as what we call our students, lots of things. Something that I've seen since I started here in high school 9 years ago is a big shift on who is paying the bill for the 18 to 21-year-old students. About 5 years ago, there was the cut to the LGA and the state funding cuts to the schools that caused our Freeborn County Department of Human Services to look at how they're spending their money. So that directly affected our 18 to 21-year-old students, and the school is now being responsible for educating them, for the most part, till they're 21. We used to have them graduate when they were 18, 19 years old, and that's no longer happening. So that causes my program to go from 6 students and 1 teacher 8-9 years ago to 3.5 teachers and 21 students right now. So I just wanted to share that, how the change in funding has caused these changes in our system. Thank you for coming.
Thank you. And I have to say a special thank you, Lori, because Lori and I had this conversation at our doorstep just a few weeks ago. I have been able to say that right here from the committee, and I appreciate you doing this.
Pat Graves, I'm a Southland School Board member, and I want to thank you for coming also. I want to agree very much with the goals that are set forth in this bill, and remind you that the reason that they are there is because school funding is the only constitutionally mandated funding. The permanent school fund is something that you said is going to be debated very much in the future, and I'd like to say that it should not be offset by state aid. That I'm not against the environment. In fact, tomorrow I'll be in Leroy and Environmental Education Day. talking to fifth graders about bees and the environment. But I think that the environment is something that has to work together with the schools, and that funding should go to schools. The other thing in the environment in this area, the wind generation tax, energy generation. If you go east of here, it's not just one school district. There's now 3-4 involved, and there's going to be more. Not only is Grand Meadow has it, Salton has Leroy has windmills, Dodge Center, and Brownsdale districts will also have windmills. That's something I think that is unique to this area that should be not offset by state aid. Also, just like, okay, the cities have commercial and industrial properties that are taxed. And so it's not fair to us that they're getting that tax and we're not. Well, I think it's fair that we should be getting the tax that is unique to this area. Thank you for the extra special ed funding we got last year. But again, I'm concerned that the funding isn't there for the state. We're talking about a big deficit again next year. The special ed funding he gave to us was cut by 80% of what was first authorized because of the deficit in the budget. I'm afraid that the same thing is going to happen to this bill. That, yes, it might be. It's a very good bill the way it's written, but I'm afraid it's not going to be implemented because of that state budget problem. One example is the cost of transportation. Several years ago, we cut our transportation costs by about 25% by rearranging our contracts. Well, just in this year, our contracts went up 12%, even though we only had a 1% increase in our contracts. Well, that was due to fuel costs. I mean, and the 1% increase we got from the state just didn't cover that. Locally, we're in good shape this year because we did pass a referendum increase. And so we're fine for this year, but 2 years down the road, we'll have a big decrease in enrollment when we have a big class graduate, and we'll be in trouble again. So if we can do this in the next couple of years, it really helps out. One of the other speakers talked about testing. That's the other area I'd like to address. I think we do too much testing, but that can be simplified. So the goal of testing is to help kids. I mean, basically, it should be an assessment so that you can improve your achievement. And I think we're working toward that in our testing goals, but it needs to be improved so that there's less testing, so that the tests are meaningful to the students, that they measure achievement, the increase in achievement of the individual students, and not just comparing one class to a different class.
Thank you.
Thank you, Pat. Corrine Chen. Good evening. Thank you as well for coming to our community. I've been in education since 1971, so I've been around for a while. I've taught in metro schools and I've taught in rural schools. I've had children that have graduated from rural schools, so I think I could see a good spectrum of the variety that's offered throughout the state. One of the things that I presented to me, I'm an elementary principal, and this is my 7th year here at Albert Lee, and one of the things I presented to my staff this fall was, as educators, what we do is take care of the most valuable natural resource in our state. And that's something that I believe very strongly in, and I would hope as legislators to also feel that taking care of the most natural, or the most important natural resource in our state is something that's well worth funding. The other thing that I have a strong passion for is all-day K funding, and I do appreciate that that's a piece that I know you've been working on for several years. As we've been at elementary principal conferences, we've been told for several years that that's a priority. We're still waiting, and hopefully this bill we'll bring that forward. A hard thing when we go for every referendum is all day. Albert Lee has been good enough for several years now to be able to fund that so we can have all day kindergarten, but that becomes an issue on the chopping block every year. Our parents have been very passionate about it and we appreciate that. And I think we know that the students that we're graduating today are not the same as the students that we were graduating when I started in my profession. The expectations that they have in our society are very different than they were 20, 30 years ago. And the entering student is very different than the student that was entering kindergarten 20 or 30 years ago. And to take care of that child, we need to have an all-day program to be able to do that. I think we've seen, if you brought the program in, that our children handle all-day K without a problem. All the concerns that parents had in the beginning were very quickly eliminated within the first 6 to 8 weeks of the program. And now they believe strongly in maintaining that in this community, and we hope that we're able to do that. But with your funding, we would be guaranteed that we'd be able to do that. So thank you again for coming.
Was there anybody else that wanted to comment before we close the room? I think we'll start with Representative Dietrich with a few closing remarks, and if you would like to address the question, which was how do we really get this bill passed, what would be the strategy we should do so? There was a room.
Thank you, Representative Brown.
You're so welcome.
How do you still pass? I think all legislation comes from the grassroots up. And I think that it is so important that you continue this dialogue beyond tonight. You need to continue it with your neighbors in your newspapers. And you need to help us get it passed. I have spent the past couple of days with Norm Draper from the Star Tribune in regards to this bill. He's been, my understanding is, quite an in-depth story on it, and I did not ask him what he was going to do to bring it in, and he said it had to be written today. So he will have something in the Star Tribune very soon. And I think it is just really important, is not that, you know, once you have that type of public momentum, that you don't let it just fizzle into just another good idea that we don't think we can ever do because we don't have enough money. And it's just a little side story on that whole issue is he went out for a long game with me last night because he wanted to know what people at the door were thinking. And after each door, we tried to engage just a little bit more about this bill so that he could get some input and what he really expected to hear after the evening was done. Was don't raise my taxes. We didn't hear it once. And in fact, what we heard, but you know, you have to remember this was door knocking. So I'll talk a little bit about that later. But in fact, what we had was a dialogue with at least six or seven parents that basically said, we moved to this area because we knew it was a good education system. We do not want our school district to go through cuts. They said that it's just like you said tonight. Our children are invested in the future. And they said it was things like, we all need to pay for this. It needs to be evenly distributed. We need to find a win-win. We have to do whatever we can as a society to make sure that our schools are not cutting. And so they have, at least that was my impression. We'll see what his impression is when he writes the story, but him and I were both a little bit surprised because we started delving into this conversation just a little bit more. But now let me just put a little footnote there. This was door knocking, and we delve into a deep discussion at most doors, and most persons, you know, use the literature, and you just say, they say thank you and that type of thing. So it isn't like this is a scientific survey or anything like that. But the point being is grassroots movement, enthusiasm, momentum can change a lot of things, and don't ever underestimate that. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative
Dietrich. Representative Dietrich. I want to echo off what Representative Dietrich just mentioned to you. But the other point that I think that we need to express here is that not many folks came out tonight. What we need to see over at the Capitol, I know it's a little bit far away from Albert Lee to the Capitol at times, but we need to see faces. We need to see people at the Capitol pushing this issue. We've seen that with other bills, and they have passed because people are there to speak on behalf of these bills. And that's how things get put into law, when you see the legislators taking note of what's going on in the districts. One of the things I did in my first term, I brought 40 legislators, first time in history, to my district that never been in the district before in their entire career as legislators. Now, these are some of the legislators that junior, seniors, and some of the freshmen have never been on the north side of Minneapolis. They kind of stereotyped it and said, no, we don't want to go over there. It's too dangerous for us. But I convinced these 40 legislators to come, and some of these folks that are up here went along. And I tell you, when we have the 40 legislators in front of the people that were having these issues and discussing these issues about what our district is like, we had children testify. We had professional, paraprofessionals. We had moms, dads. We had everybody from the communities and all colors of people. This wasn't Latinos or African Americans. These were all colors of people testifying in front of the 40 members of legislators. I tell you, we got things done. We went back and we worked hard. And these legislators took it for the truth of what the communities need. And that's what I see here. And I make that point because that's what I see here. When you're out there and you come forward and you testify in front of legislators, we don't hear that. That's how bills get introduced. That's how bills get passed. So we need you over at the Capitol. So we come up and testify in front of our legislators, your governor, your commissioners, so they can hear how good this bill can be for your districts. So I want to thank you for having us out here too.
Thank you. First, thank you all for coming out tonight. It's wonderful to see you, it's wonderful to hear from you, and I hope you'll stay in touch with us, and we can hand out contact information. It's on the internet, and I hope that some of you will return to the Capitol in 2009. I'd like to touch on some of the questions and points that were brought up. A few comments was brought up, and the question was, I think, whether this could be a political football or not. But I can't say that the chair of the committee, Minnie Brown, has said she's willing to talk about a few comments with the governor. We want to talk about the entire plan. Whether that's political football, whether the reality is, you know, there's only so much money to work with, we have to figure out how to put the puzzle together. I think that's an invitation to conversation. I'm glad to see the library folks here tonight. I carried a bill for rural telecommunication funding in libraries, and each of the folks, each of my fellow committee members who were on that bill and voted for that bill, and I'm appreciative to them helping us with that matter. No Child Left Behind. We can talk for some probably hours about No Child Left Behind. I will say that this committee had quite a bigger discussion on whether we should just opt out as a state. And while that matter is still going on, I will say that the legislature is doing good work on different types of testing. And I agree, I think the committee has mentioned too much testing. In St. Peter, in North, in Mankato, and in other school districts, we've been trying to do growth testing, finding out the growth for each individual child. I know the Northwest Education Association, for example, NWEA, and you have that here as well. That is a wonderful method. And Representative Kathy Brainerd from Mankato has been working with Representative Carlos Mariani and others to try to change how we approach testing in Minnesota. And I'm looking forward to that because I don't think any testing mechanism or protocol should be a punitive one on any school, any district, or any child. Building bonds were mentioned, and Robin and I talked a great deal. We vote on the bill to lower the effect of building bonds upon farms, upon ag properties. Because both being rural representatives, we heard from our districts that had building bonds after building bonds failed, not because farmers don't support education, because the cost was simply too high. We're going to come back with that again in 2009 as part of this bill. Referendums certainly are a problem. In St. Peter, we're at the 14th percentile nationally for property tax law. 14%. Why? Because our two biggest employers don't pay property tax. We have the Regional Treatment Center for Sex Offenders, and we have the State Spouse College. So anytime we pass a referendum, it falls on houses. And that's what happens. That's the story throughout rural Minnesota. And so I agree, and that's why that's part of this bill. Even if the district has no referendum, my feeling is we have to at least bring those districts up to $500. Adequate education is certainly a constitutional requirement in Minnesota. And one person mentioned Jesse Ventura. I'll tell you a very quick story. The reason I'm here is because of Jesse Ventura. He did not recruit me to run. He came to St. Peter about 2 years after the tornado to see how things were going. My wife was starting a community-built playground, which was built, and they were selling hand piles of clay. You put your hand in the pile, you pay $25, your hand pile gets put up on the playground. And she said, "We can't get first hand. I said, you better bring a lot of clay." And she said, "Well, are you going to come with me?" I said, "Well, yeah, I'm coming." And Martha said, "But you're going to make him mad. And he'll never put his hand in the pile." I said, okay. "We'll see if he comes to this. You get the hand in the pile, I'll stay quiet, you leave, I'll ask a question." So in front of another closing on Highway 169, Martha scurried away with her pile and looked over her shoulder, and I asked her to venture her adventure. How are you going to pay the state takeover of the general fund? You have no long-term funding plan. And I got pulled aside by one of his assistants, who in language that you would only hear in a very R-rated movie, asked me why I was leaping, asking bleeping hard questions to the governor. This was a bleeping handshake tour. Shortly thereafter, I filed for school. Because I was so mad. I also got if the assistant wanted to repeat those comments to WCCO, which had a TV camera there, but he declined that opportunity. But there's the story behind that is that the state does have an obligation, a constitutional obligation, an economic obligation, a social obligation, and a moral obligation to support education. And this plan is not only about the numbers, it's proposals about a vision. A vision of taking the state in the 21st century and helping all our children truly succeed through positive reinforcement, innovation, support, cooperation, and not inclusion. And finally, Representative Robert Brown spent more time in my office on email taking me off the House floor to talk about wind generation and property defense. Gigi was daunted. She lobbied me left, right, up, and down. And I talked to the chair. And this committee did exactly what you asked us to do. Robin was successful. We did not succeed in the final bill. That's why we're going back to 2009, and that's why Robin Brown's going to be there to fight to correct that inequity.
I want to thank everybody for coming tonight. This is a wonderful turnout. And again, I see so many friends and co-workers in the administration here. And that's what's so important about this meeting tonight, that you were able to voice the needs of the district. And I thought it was so important, so very important to get the committee down here and hear what we need here in southern Minnesota. What I want to talk about as far as the bill is concerned, the bill that's in front of you, and I hope you do read it. In fact, I encourage people to read bills in general when they want to speak to their legislators about them. Sometimes you hear little snippets of things that you vote on and things that you think, and until you actually read the bill, when you read the bill, you know what's really going on. There's some good meat in this bill. But it's a work in progress. And I know that your comments tonight will directly have an effect on this bill. It is going to be seen in multiple committees, where legislators and people throughout the district will have opportunities to testify, and it will come out in a slightly different form than what you see it today, I am sure. And your voice was heard tonight, and you have a say about that. I do think that one of the things that we need to remember is that, what I see as the most important point about the bill is that we're really striving towards fair and adequate funding for all kids in Minnesota. Fair and adequate. Those are the only two words, you know, that I think we even need to use right now. We in southern Minnesota need the same
same funding for our kids, whether they are poor or special needs, as any place else in the state. And I am absolutely willing to fight for it. And you can see right here with the committee down right now tonight that they're willing to listen to this, and they urge you. There were important points made tonight about the need to hang on to QCOM. And every chance I've had to vote on QCOM, I've always voted to save it. And the chair knows very well where I stand on this position. And we haven't always been on the same page, but like Representative Morrow said, that looks like there's room for a little bit of wiggle room here. And, you know, that's what you hope for when you're negotiating a bill. We have to be very careful about how we're funding education. There were some great points made tonight about considering the property wealth of the district. That is so important, and that's why we have to have an equalization factor in here. And I'm really happy to have Representative Dietrich here tonight, because she and I have worked together and presented on equalization. Believe it or not, the suburbs have something very much in common with us as far as their tax base is concerned. So we do have friends in the city that understand our needs here and have very similar needs. And thank you, Denise, for coming tonight. I was one of the members also that went over to represent the maintenance school and got an opportunity to listen to their needs. And you'd be surprised how many of their needs are so similar to ours here as well. And there are, and they have different needs as well. It's so important to see that school. You know, and until you're really there in the building, what the type of security that building needed, and actually saw that, until you actually experience that, you know, it's hard to say, you know, what their costs are. So you have to take that into consideration as well. You have to take into consideration the needs of all the kids and all the states. What I want to say again is, while this bill is being processed, again, it is a work in progress, my mantra is going to be, it needs to be fair, and it needs to be adequate. Fair for our kids here in Southern Minnesota, but fair for the kids across the state of Minnesota. Thank you, and we are adjourned.